Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to The Worker's Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the former Midwest Coalition of Labor, now the National Coalition of Labor.
Woohoo!
All right. Yay. How do you like that? We're fantastic. Moving up in this world. So, Ken Edwards with the NCL, Ed Maher with the NCL, Phil Davidson with the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning. Happy Sunday. Yep. Happy marathon Sunday. Day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm not running to you.
Not this year, but
have you run?
I do have one under my belt.
Oh, good for you, Ed. Yeah.
I drove the route one time.
That's good enough.
It was exhausting.
That's good enough.
I had to stop for an Italian beef halfway through.
A lot of traffic.
I'm surprised I haven't told you that I ran the marathon yet. Usually,
yeah,
hard to escape that conversation with someone who's done.
They're like vegans and CrossFitters and atheists. They just can't stop.
How do you know when somebody's a vegan? Do they tell you
exactly.
Immediately? That's funny. So look, this is our second anniversary.
Yes,
yeah. Right of the Worker's Mic. It flew by.
It did.
Right?
It did.
I mean, it really, really flew by.
And for
by.
Our celebratory show, they put us on in competition with the Bears. The Bears
thanks so much.
Yeah, the Bears are not on. You don't need to change over. The Bears have already won the game. They locked it up. They're up, I think, 8-2, Ken? They're up...
3-1.
Yeah, against the Pantaloons of New Hampshire.
Never
New
seen
Hampshire
that score before, but yeah,
it was. They got one game away.
They changed the rules in that game. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's in a different country.
Right.
There's a couple of redos, a couple of sticky wickets.
They're playing football.
That's right.
Right. They actually played soccer.
Well, we got an extra half hour today. So
yeah, that's cool.
Our listeners,
that's right.
Yeah.
Super cool. So look, we got a lot of people to thank real quick. First of all, our sponsors, every last one of them. Not going to read them. There's too many of them, but we really, really appreciate all the sponsorships. It's been a really big deal for us, and the show continues to grow.
Yeah, and right? Welcome new sponsors
and a ton of new sponsors.
Yeah,
and what
they
else
want in on the action.
There are a lot of people that have worked on the show over the past couple of years, whether they're producers, cameramen, people who come in and bring Ken water of varying temperatures depending on what he wants.
And he knows all their names.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to go through all their names because I'm going to do it in alphabetical order, not necessarily in order of importance.
Yeah, Ken, don't say who's that when we say the names.
Kevin
okay?
typed it up, but. To our delightful producer who's in the booth with us today, and that's Ashley Byhun. I even pronounced it right because Kevin spelled it out phonetically.
That's nice of you.
Yeah. Ben Anderson, he was a former producer. Louis, Max, and Enzo, our beloved camera crew that used to do the Surf Report.
Absolutely.
Michael DeLeonardis. We have Tony DeNardis, and it's Tony Michael DeNardis, and then we have Michael Tony DeLeonardis.
That's the most ridiculous thing.
Yeah, I think they should just merge and become one person. And
for me, they're actually one person.
Yeah, to Ken, they are.
Yeah, they are one person.
Yeah. Bob Ferguson, our beloved Ferg.
Fergie.
Yeah. You're the best. He's been with us since day one.
Absolutely.
Ernie Scatton, who does a bunch of the reads and the ads at WGN.
He's always really nice and always in a good mood.
Frankie Ruggeri, who I think he only came to work once or twice, but we really liked him.
Oh, he's the best. He's a carpenter's son, so we love him.
There you go.
Mary Boyle.
She the boss?
She is the boss.
The grand poobah.
And always been very supportive
very
of the show.
Very supportive of us.
Steve Tarpley is maybe the only guy who possibly could have better hair than Kevin.
toss up.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Joe Marino, whose son's actually joined the apprenticeship at 134
for
the electricians.
That's right.
Boss Man Joe.
By the show, that's right.
Super cool.
And Kevin. Kevin, you're the man. We make fun of you a lot for breaking your ankle playing basketball with young children.
Dunking on a 3-year-old.
But your hair is fantastic, and you're related to Phil, so we got to be nice to you.
That's right.
I would call Kevin like the executive producer almost, right?
Yeah.
Like
Kevin's great. He's a fan of the show. He loves the show. He supports the show. And
it was actually the show was his idea, to be blunt with you.
Yeah.
Right? Literally, the show was his idea.
I mean, Tarpley nice.
Came up to see me, and then they pitched this thing like, hey, we're going to do – I don't know if anybody knows this backstory. They pitched – the Midwest Coalition of Labor, hey, we want to have you on Mr. Fix-It.
Yeah, doing regular segments. Yeah.
Yeah, or I think it was like a working trade thing.
Yeah.
And we had this conversation. So I said, yeah, of course we want to do that, you know? And then they turned around and called me a half hour later and said, forget everything we just said. You guys want your own show? Yeah.
These guys know good radio.
Who likes to hear me talk more than me?
Nobody.
Yeah, I'm
correct.
Think.
Nobody.
No.
I can't think of anybody.
But anyway, it's been this 2 years has flown by.
And thanks to the listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much. Like, the really nice comments, places we go. Everywhere I go right now, people are like, oh, you guys have a really great radio show, and we really enjoy it. It's really important. You know, even Jim Sweeney, we almost squeezed out a compliment from him. You know,
I think we have it on record.
I do want to say this is a great forum, and we are getting the word out. I hear more and more good things about this.
What?
That's the nicest thing Jim's ever said about anything.
It's like his like pulling teeth to get a compliment from them. But you know, but we appreciate it.
Is that going to be on your gravestone? That quote.
Yeah, they're going to have a button. People walk up, press the button.
So, anything else we got in this regard, Ed? We're ready to move on to our show. We got Martin from
Casey
the
Martin
Union.
Is going
to
be our first guest coming up.
Yep, and then
we'll give you Bears updates throughout the show. So don't change over, because who cares? It's going to go terribly wrong. They're playing in England. They're sleepy.
Who cares?
Governor.
They had 14 Guinnesses last night.
That's right. Yeah.
All right, listen, we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN, powered by the National Coalition of Labor.
Da, 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 da.
That's right. We'll talk about that some more. Talked about it a little bit at the top of the hour. But today is what? Our second anniversary, right? As we talked about.
That's right.
And we're stoked to have Casey Martin, the president of the Midwest, because we're going to keep your name, right? MCL Credit Union?
Yeah, we're not changing that.
Why? It's a hassle, right?
It's quite the process to change that name. And now, happy anniversary, guys.
Thank you so much. And thanks for being with us since day one.
Which anniversary is the second anniversary? I know the first one is like the paper anniversary, or I'm going to look this up. We'll get back to this.
I think that's the one where WGN buys us all cars.
Well, good luck with that.
Yeah.
Cards?
Cars. New cars.
So we can't even get a card.
Yeah, I would take a card.
Yeah,
a card would be pretty nice.
A thank you note, you know. Hey, everybody, thank you so much.
We're not going to say good job. I'll say decent job.
There you go.
Average job at best.
Stick of beef jerky. Maybe that's year number two.
So, like Casey, all right, how's the credit union going?
We're doing real well. We had our best year ever last year, and we actually issued our first special dividend last year, $100,000. We're having another great year. We'll see. I've got a board meeting coming up. We'll talk about potential payouts there. We'll see how this plays out. But we're doing real well, and I can't complain.
What are people using the most right now? Is it car loans, home loans? What is it?
Right now, the hot product is a home equity line of credit.
Okay. How come?
Well, what we've seen is that everybody that owned a home prior to 2020 refinanced in that bottom out where when the rates fell to virtually nothing at the beginning of COVID. So everyone's got their first mortgage that owned a home prior to that, roughly in a rate of somewhere in the upper twos, low threes.
I have one. Yep.
Yeah.
And fast forward 4 years later, there's need for cash. Updating kitchens. They've got balances now on their credit cards based upon inflation and things costing more and whatever. So a lot of people need that $25,000, $50,000, $75,000 for a various number of things, but nobody wants to do a cash-out refinance and take today's rate, which is somewhere in the, depending on the day, upper mid-5.
All right, so let's stop, because let's explain that in plain English, because I get confused about this myself.
Sure.
So a home equity line of credit is using your current mortgage rate, if I'm not...
No. So, let me clarify. Great question. So it's a second mortgage against your house, but it's the ability to take access, monetize the equity that's
so
in
you have in the house.
Yes.
A certain percentage of the equity, though, right?
Correct. Yeah. Correct. We go up to 90% of the equity of the house. So whatever the value of your home is, let's say your home was $300,000, your first mortgage is $150,000.
Right.
There's $150,000 of equity, which you can access for cash.
Yes.
And that's a form of a loan to do the things that you want or need to do.
And so what's the interest rate, Casey?
Well, our home equity lines of credit are variable tied to prime, which is coming down.
Right.
So it was 8.5%, and then the Fed just lowered the rates 0.5%. So now it's at 8% is the prime rate, and then our borrowers have what's called a margin to that, which so it's maybe a plus a little bit or minus a little bit, depending on your credit.
Okay. So they're not refinancing their house, in other words, like you said, going from in the twos to in the sixes.
No.
That would make no sense.
No, that wouldn't.
It's a separate loan.
It's a separate loan, and so they're keeping that 2% first mortgage or 3% first mortgage.
Yes.
And they're getting access to the cash that they need.
So what do you think? Is that a good idea, bad idea to borrow against your house?
It depends on everybody's situation, right? It's the second cheapest form of cash that you're going to get as an individual.
What's the first?
Your first mortgage.
I got it. Okay.
Yeah, it's like a secured loan versus an unsecured loan.
Right. You'd think that's like if you're financially literate and you're good with your money and you can pay it back, right, and you have a budget and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, right, is have you looked at this?
Right.
And obviously our underwriting looks at your ability to pay as well. So, you know, we're not going to let you get over your skis on this.
So when you say underwriting, meaning like people that are looking at your loan and they'll say like, hey, so-and-so had this great work history over the past 5 years, right? They have this much in credit card debt, right? You can literally pull credit reports, obviously, correct?
Yeah, we do pull credit reports. So, and what we do see a lot is part of this is somebody with two or three credit cards that has balances of 10, 5, maybe add it all up to, say, $25,000, $30,000 of credit card debt, and you're paying, and they're paying high 20s on that,
right?
20%. All of a sudden, now you're looking at a loan in the high single digits that's coming down.
Right.
And it's, right. So that makes a lot of sense.
So you pay off those high interest credit cards with a low interest home equity line of credit, right? Home equity loan. And now you've just freed up all that money, right? All that interest. Now you're not just paying to borrow money, or you're paying a little bit less to borrow money. And then it's easier to pay back that that smaller amount, correct?
Correct. Okay. Right.
And what's the length of the term?
So, it depends on the amount that you borrow. For ours, every bank, every credit union, every institution that offers these administers them a little differently. Ours requires. It's a fancy term, fully amortization, meaning at the end of the term, it will be paid off. But going back to that that example, we've modeled out $25,000 of credit card debt put on a home equity line of credit. And when you look at minimum payments on those credit cards versus the minimum payment on a HELOC, with discipline, you can take that $25,000 of credit card debt and turn it into zero in pretty much as little as 3 years.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome. And free up that money for your family.
Correct.
Yeah, that's great. That's really, really great. And so let's keep going, right? So you guys still are offering car loans.
Correct.
How are we doing on car loans?
Our loan volumes are down this year because there's still sticker shock at these at the vehicle prices.
Yeah. The hybrids.
But, you know, we're still doing great as far under historical averages. It's just down a little from last year. But there was a lot of auto loans last year and the year before.
Okay.
So we're looking at like a high peak, you know.
And then let's talk about just straight up home loans, right? Because this has been some crazy, crazy times in terms of the federal interest rate, right? Which was reduced by half a point.
Half a point, and then...
And they haven't done it again yet.
But it's supposed to be another quarter point soon, right?
So they say, but who knows, you know? It seems to be all over the map.
Yeah.
And then you're looking at these interest rates for mortgages, and some have already built it in. Some think it's going to go lower. So I was talking to Casey before we got on the air. And, like, tell about the swing, Casey. Like what's the swing look like?
So, yes, and this is very difficult for new buyers to understand during the process, too. The rates are varying by a half a point in a very short period of time, depending on what type of news is hitting. Did the jobs number make what it was supposed to be? Is the inflation where it's supposed to be? Because your mortgage rates are built off the treasuries.
The treasuries, right? Yeah.
Correct. And they're not, it's not 100% correlated, but they're highly correlated.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is bets are taking place on these treasuries and, you know, what the Fed is going to do ultimately over the long run. And so I don't want to say that the market, the Fed, you know, the traders are overreacting, but they're definitely outreacting when these news reports hit, oversized reactions.
Right.
And we're getting back to this about a first-time home buyer, when you go, people try and get, you have to start with the pre-approval.
Sure.
And so people that don't, they don't know the process. They're like, I want to get pre-approved. Well, what's your rate at? And it's difficult to explain how this industry works because you can't, and this is what Ken and I were talking about, you can't lock your rate until you have a signed purchase contract. So when you go to get your pre-approval, you as a buyer, I want to have the best deal.
Yeah.
And so it's really a commission-based industry, and this is where I love what we do. I don't make any money on it, directly or indirectly. So I have no financial incentive.
You personally?
Me, correct. The industry is very, very, I think I might be the only person that is not commission-based or some form of fee-based, like, and based
right.
to get the deal done. And what that does is, like, when you go to someplace else, that person that you're on the phone with is incentivized to try and get you to close with them. And what what happens is they might lie. So and think about this. I just told you can't lock.
Right.
Your first time out there, like, oh, and they might say, like, whatever the real market rate is. Let's say the rate on a 30-year today is 6%. Let's just say it.
Sure.
They might tell you then, when you're getting a pre-approval, oh, we can get you at 5.75. Well, except they're not held accountable to that because there's no signed purchase contract. They're mm-hmm. going to go look.
Yeah.
And once they get a signed purchase contract, you had already felt like you did your shopping.
Yeah.
And so, like, oh, I'm going to go with this guy. And now that guy tells you, well, it's actually 6.25. Well, what happened?
Right.
Right, so
the rates move. Sorry,
yeah,
right,
yeah, right.
And there's no recourse.
Right,
no,
right, because they're not held accountable.
And that's what. So what we try to do is educate our borrowers. This is how it works. So, like, what I tell our folks in these sessions is, get your pre-approval with us, and then hold my feet to the fire when you got that signed purchase contract, and let's see where we shake out. And I think you'll find out we're a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
Well, credit unions are. I mean, look, we're not for profit,
right?
Like you said, we gave back money. You know, as I'm going around the country and Ed and I are talking to unions that are coming on board, you know, I literally use you as an example. I say, look, where I'm from, we have a credit union, and it was 150's credit union. Now it's the Midwest Coalition of Labor Credit Union. But they actually sent a six-figure check back to its members. You know, not everybody got $100,000, but it was, you know, divvied up. Right? How cool is that? I mean, that's... You don't see that?
No,
from,
look, never.
I've had Citibank my entire life. I've never gotten a check back
never.
From them.
No.
I owe them money.
Most lenders are charging an extra quarter point, whatever it is, for servicing a loan right when you close. And so you're a nonprofit, and it's definitely a better deal for members, especially if...
Well, and also, Casey, like, look, talk about this, because I know you do a lot of work with, in our legal services, Nick Cortese.
Sure, sure.
And his guy, Russ Keller, and help people, like, establish or reestablish or increase their credit scores. Talk about that for a second, and what does that mean in plain English for people?
Sure, and I think, you know, and so the credit specialist over there is Russ Keller,
yep.
and I love him. What's nice about having Union Legal Services also is... Because of the industry and the fact that I still work for a financial institution, there's still a lot of hesitation just up front.
Yeah.
And so I can tell somebody something until I'm blue in the face, but when you have somebody outside of the financial services telling you the same thing and it's the same message, it works, right?
I think that's right.
You know, and so we I'm able to see up front, like, hey, we can fix your credit. And, like, I can tell you what to do, or we could send you to the specialist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here we go. And together we do that, right?
And then, once again, just for people that haven't heard you before, because it's been a while since you've been on, you know, lowering or raising your credit score has a direct correlation to your interest rate.
Correct.
And so you raise the score, you lower your interest rate. You lower your interest rate, you can pay less credit card debt, correct?
Yeah.
Interest.
Yeah. So the lower your rate, the more that's going towards principal when you're making your payments.
That's
and
right.
The faster this gets done.
And so, you know, just an easy thing is, you know, you guys work on it, right? You raise somebody's credit score and you tell them, call the credit card company, look at my credit score now. I want an 18% rate instead of the 24 I'm paying right now, right? I mean, that's low-hanging fruit.
Well, so, I mean, I don't have necessarily any say. I mean, we can guide them.
No, I'm saying that's like, what you'll say.
I've told people, like, look, you need to call this credit card company and ask for a limit increase.
There you go.
Because utilization is the second most
right.
Important factor in your credit score behind on-time payments.
Say that one more time.
On-time payments is the number one factor in your credit score. The second highest factor is your utilization, which is the balance at reporting to the credit bureaus relative to your limit.
How much debt you have compared to what your credit limits are.
Yes. So, like, when you get a credit card, it has a limit.
Yeah.
And what you want is high limits, low balances, or no balances.
No balance.
Right. Right. So it affects... So if you have a $10,000 limit and you spend $8,000 and all of a sudden you boost that limit to, you know, $16,000, now you're 50% instead of 80%.
Correct.
Right?
And the key number in the industry is less than 30%.
Is that right?
You know, well...
I didn't know that. Look, I didn't know that.
We want it to be one. We want it, your utilization to really be 1% is the cream of the crop. That's when you're going to get top-tier type stuff.
Got it.
For the folks here, what I always advise is if you know when your credit cards are going, the statements are going to hit,
yeah,
usually it's the same time of the month,
yes,
make a payment before so that your reported balance to the bureaus is lower.
That's interesting.
Right, so the timing of those payments matters too. So, like, if let's say you had, you know, you bought a refrigerator,
because then it's paid off,
a $3,000 refrigerator, and you could have paid it off in cash, and you have the cash, right? So, as opposed to letting that $3,000 balance report to the bureaus, pay $2,500 of it, and what reports to the bureaus is $500 at the statement. Then pay the $500 off, and you didn't pay any interest, and you just gamed the credit system.
So basically, like, you're using their money for free.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah.
So let's say somebody wants to get a hold of you. What's the best way? A call?
Yeah. The credit union. I don't know our number offhand.
So I do. It's 708-482-9606.
There we
go. I'm going to say it again. 708-482-9606. You would think the president of the credit union would know.
I don't know our number offhand.
Good one, Casey. And so for those of you that don't know, and then it's you can just Google Midwest Coalition of Labor Credit Union. It's a beautiful website now that you guys did a really good job of kind of getting up to speed. We have other credit unions that we work with, Building Trades up in Minnesota. Did you talk to the one down in St. Louis?
Yeah.
So we'll be talking about that as well, because some states, Casey, you need a brick-and-mortar location in order to do business, right?
Missouri.
Missouri is one of them, right?
Yes.
So in our neck of the woods, so we'll be talking about that. We have another one in Kansas City. There are a bunch of labor credit unions out there, but what we have found, Casey and everybody else, is that some of the labor credit unions allow other non-labor folks to come in, which is mind-boggling to me, right? It's either like sort of like you're either in or you're out. Like pick a side.
Yeah.
And our credit union,
straddling the fence.
And I use this example all the time, is that you need to be a card-carrying member in good standing to be eligible to use the Midwest Coalition of Labor Credit Union, right?
Yes. It's funny, within the credit union industry, we are very strict on membership getting in.
As well you should be.
And so that's actually unique in the industry, because most places want to grow their membership. But so when we talk about what the credit union is and what the value is, we are 100% union.
Yeah.
This is no joke.
It's for us, it's by us.
Correct.
And your background, Casey, tell everybody your background.
Yes. So I'm actually a third generation card carrying member of Local 150, International Union of Operating Engineers. So my grandfather was a gold card carrying member, which means he was in the union for 50 years. My father, who passed away earlier this year, was a gold card carrying member.
And my father was a business agent. I think the longest serving business agent in Local 150's history.
There we go.
Died on the job.
I said he would.
Yeah, and you're right, he did.
I said he would. He's not.
God rest his soul. Good dude.
He was never going to leave the truck.
Denny Martin.
And then I've been in the union myself for 22 years now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So look, I say that because when I talk to people on the phone, you know, especially the operators, I'm like, here's the phone number. Which, Casey, I think you should get tattooed on your arm now. I tell people, ask for Casey. Casey actually has a union card in his pocket. And how cool is that, right? He understands you. His father was a union member. His grandfather's a union member. It's just like, it's for us, by us. You speak our language. And that's important for us, you know. So people, look, everybody I've talked to is like, oh, my God, I called the credit union. I got a car loan. Like, they did everything over the phone. You know, I still have both my cars there. I bought my first house through the credit union. I can't say enough good things about it. So, you know, look, thank you so much for everything that you do, Casey. We appreciate it. If you want to talk to the Midwest Coalition of Labor Credit Union, it's 708-482-9606. And we will be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher with the National Coalition of Labor, here with Ken Edwards from the NCL, Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council, and we are joined by two fabulous guests, and they are Alyssa Goodstein, the Communications Director for the Illinois AFL-CIO, and B. Thompson, a business representative from IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 134 here in Cook County. So welcome, Alyssa and B.
Yeah. By the way, both sponsors of the Workers' Mic.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
IBEW and the AFL.
What a coincidence. Well, we thank you for being here today instead of being out running the marathon. We know that you both wanted to be out doing
or flying to London to watch the Bears.
Yeah, that's right. Expanding business to the city of Chicago.
I heard the score is 1-1 now.
Yeah, I heard it's they took away a couple points for an infringement on the Pantaloons. I don't know. Don't worry about it. You're better off here listening to our show. So, Alyssa, I was down at the State Building Trades meeting down in Bloomington a couple of days ago and listened to you talk a lot about this conference that you were just with. And I think it's, from what I'm hearing, the biggest building trades or the biggest labor conference in the country. And that's Trades Women Build Nations.
Yeah.
And you were both there. So, Alyssa, tell me a little bit more about this.
Yeah, so Tradeswomen Build Nations is the largest gathering of union tradeswomen in the world. It was in New Orleans this year. There were 5,200 attendees, 370 from Illinois.
Wow. 370 from Illinois.
370.
That's massive.
And it's going to be in Chicago next year.
Oh, super cool.
So can you imagine? I mean, what do we do when we get that Illinois delegation organized?
Yeah.
It's going to be amazing.
Well, yeah, I think it's going to be huge when you can just pick a handful of people. You don't have to fly them around the country. Because where was this most recent convention?
New Orleans.
Right? New Orleans,
that's right.
Big Easy.
Oh, God, I love New Orleans. Not as much as Ken, but I do love New Orleans.
It's an evil Vegas.
It is Vegas with a hint of evil.
And B, you were there too, yeah?
I was there.
And how'd you like it?
I consider it the Super Bowl of all conferences.
That's really awesome.
It is so empowering. Yeah. It's amazing.
Was it at a convention center? Like, was it like, or like, where was it? At a hotel or what?
Yes, it was at the convention center.
And so 5,200 union trades women, basically, correct?
And allies.
So women from trades. Right, in positions of power, business agents,
all levels,
officers, all levels, like everything from top to bottom.
Journey workers, everyone.
Who were some of the big speakers?
Well, we had Vicky O'Leary, who was the first female iron worker out of Chicago, and Adriana Lopez from Iron Workers Local 63 introduced her in English and Spanish, and that was maybe a first for
really?
The conference.
Interesting.
Gina Walsh, who was one of the first female insulators out of the St. Louis area.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Was Liz Schuler there or no?
Liz Schuler was there, just as an ally in support.
Gotcha. And so, she's the head of the AFL-CIO, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
So one of the things that we talk about a great deal on this show is how important it is that as unions start to increase, especially in the building trades, increase their female participation, it sort of creates a perception and an understanding of the reality that there are spaces for everyone. Because if you're the first woman to join a building trades union, you look around, you don't see any familiar faces, anybody that looks like you, it may seem like something that's not approachable, not attainable. But as you start to see more and more faces, you're welcome. You know that there's a place. You've got a built-in sort of group. And so, you know, a conference like this, it's got to be just overwhelming, the support and the opportunities to kind of talk about ways to continue to build upon that.
I mean, I would definitely say so. I'm a communications director. I haven't worked with the tools. I never saw that there were women who looked like me that even wore mascara that could work in construction. And as I get to hear tradeswomen's stories and meet them, I realize I could do this. This sounds so cool.
Yeah.
It's hard work, but it's amazing. And I've always really enjoyed working with my hands. I grew up doing art. I used to build and stretch my own canvases. I sculpted for a while. And realizing that this is taking art out into the world.
It's never too late. Classes are coming up from Local 150.
That's true.
I don't know
and
about
134.
That.
134.
So let's talk B. All right, you were a 134 member, right?
I am.
And you are. Right. And so when did you get your card?
I became an apprentice in February of 1990, and I got my JW card in 1994.
Okay. So Where did you work in construction?
I did. Okay. I worked various job sites, Harold Washington Library, O'Hara Terminal 5, and just multiple jobs.
And what made you decide to become an electrician?
It was, I always say, by accident. I was in college and just kind of, you know, taking my time through college, and then all of a sudden I felt the need that I needed an income. And I received information from a group of women called Chicago Women in Trades regarding, you know, opportunities in the trades. And from, I did their pre-apprenticeship, and then I signed up for 134.
That was it?
That was it.
Never looked back?
Never looked back.
Dropped out of college?
Changed my life.
Did you drop out of college?
I eventually went back.
There you go. Okay.
I like to finish what I start.
Yeah. There you go. Where'd you go?
I went to, well, initially Xavier University. In New Orleans, and I graduated from Chicago State with a degree in chemistry, and ultimately went to nursing school, and I have a BSN from Olivet Nazarene University.
Wow.
Renaissance woman.
Yeah, no impressive. Kidding.
That's what my goddaughter calls me.
Xavier in New Orleans, huh? That's so you were back in your town.
I was.
What's your number one place that you go? Like, if you've got to get something to eat in New Orleans, where are you going?
Oh, my gosh.
Tough
honestly,
question.
Mother's? Yeah.
Well, I like Mother's.
I love Mother's.
Honestly, we have friends there, so I get a lot of home cooking.
Okay.
So that's even better.
I don't have friends anywhere I go.
Just even at home?
No.
That gets takeout cooking.
That's exactly right.
So, all right. So you become an electrician, right? You become an IBW 134 member. And so you start in construction. And then how long do you stay in construction?
So I was in construction for 8 years.
Okay.
And then I got a job with Cook County as a house electrician.
Okay, and explain what does that mean?
So a house electrician just means that you're a part of the Cook County staff, and you do anything from installation, maintenance, repair, I mean, anything electrical that needs to be done.
So you go from working out of the hall, right? Meaning the hall sends you out to work. Construction sites, you might work for 3 weeks. You might work for 3 months. You're laid off sometimes in the winter, et cetera, et cetera. And then you go to work for Cook County. And that's a full-time job, right?
It is a full-time job.
Steady gig.
Year-round.
Yes.
And you're making prevailing wage?
Yes.
No, I mean, for those of you listening, what that means in plain English is that you're making the prevailing wage for construction, 40 hours a week plus overtime.
Sometimes, yes.
Well, yeah. But a minimum of 40 hours, right?
Absolutely.
Plus benefits, right?
Yes.
And do you get vacation time?
We do get vacation time.
Sick time?
When I left, they instituted sick time into the contract.
Right after you left?
Right after I left.
That's just
of
how
course.
It goes.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that is like literally the cream of the crop.
Yeah, that's the gig to
right?
get.
Yeah,
yes.
For sure. You're working for a municipality getting a prevailing wage, you know, which is a lot of money. And so you want to talk about a good living. So you've already vested in the 134 pension, right? And now you switch over to the Cook County pension, if I'm not mistaken?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And then how long does it take to vest there?
10 years.
So you went and you worked there for 20-some-odd years?
22 years.
Okay. And then you came over to work as a business agent at 134?
Yes.
Okay. I got to know. How does that happen?
How does that happen?
Yeah. How do you get to work? How do you get to become a business agent in 134?
Well, you know, you do your work and people notice, and one day you may get a phone call.
Do you get involved in the union?
Absolutely.
You go to union meetings?
Absolutely.
Volunteer for committees and things like that?
Yes.
Phone bank and like, I mean, the whole spectrum, right?
Yeah.
The whole deal.
It's a lot
of work. I guess what I'm saying, and this is really where I'm going with this, is that people always say like, oh, you know, I could be a business agent. You know, I could be an officer of the union, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, they should hire me. I'm like, you know, you should probably come to a union meeting first, right? This is step number one. Walk in the hall and then maybe volunteer for a food bank or come to this or volunteer at the, like, get involved, right? To show that you're interested.
Right. Be proactive.
That's right. That's exactly right. So you were proactive.
I am.
And were, like, before you got that job.
Absolutely.
Was it a goal of yours or just happened?
No, I never imagined becoming a business agent.
Is that right?
That is correct.
You like it or don't?
I love it, actually.
Do you really?
It's my favorite job.
You're never lonely because your phone is always ringing.
Always
It can be
ringing.
Christmas Day. your opening presence and
it
your
can
phone
change
rings.
The whole one phone call can change the whole course of your day.
That's for sure. Sure.
And 1,000 phone calls can change it even more than that.
Don't you remember pagers? I remember carrying the pager.
Did you ever have the bag phone?
I never had the bag phone. I went from pager to like the Moto Razor or whatever it was. You know? But the pager would go off and every single one was blank, blank, blank number, 911. Yeah. Every page was 911. So whatever. But yeah, I remember that. So now you have a work phone.
I do.
And I'm assuming, like most business agents, you're there for the members.
Always.
Yeah.
And that is our only mission.
And answer the phone,
the
right?
Yes.
And nobody's calling to say hello.
You know, once in a blue moon, that's I do get a hello.
Okay, that's cool.
From my old county co-workers.
Oh, there you go. Not from the current like people you represent. No. But I said this, you know, I was a, you know, lawyer slash organizer slash business agent for 150 for a really, really long time. And I've always said, like, it's a high burnout job, right? Because your phone, like you said, Ed.
It's challenging.
Problem solving.
It's exactly. Nonstop problem solving. It's rewarding at times.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Right? Like if you solve somebody's problem or help them or help their family, you know, it's a really good feeling.
It is.
So like every once in a blue moon, I've always said like the one person that says, thank you so much, right? Mm-hmm. Or I wouldn't be in this job without you, or, you know, you saved my marriage, or, you know, you got me that blah, 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 whatever it was, makes you feel good.
It does. You gratification. Know,
it is gratification.
Mm-hmm.
So how long do you think you'll do it?
That remains to be seen.
Okay.
Yeah, that remains to be seen.
Yeah, I don't know, for me anyway, after 25 years, I was starting to get burned out, to be blunt with you, right? Because every single phone call is a problem.
You were an agent for 25 years?
I was a lawyer slash organizer slash agent.
Oh, yeah.
And I was 20 plus years at 150, and then I was 5 years at the newspaper union. So it was like close to 30.
Okay.
And, you know, it
they're not easy days.
No.
There's not a lot of quiet.
They're not easy days. And for us at 150, when I first started, we worked 6 days a week. They were open on Saturdays, if you remember, Ed. And,
yeah, you know, I remember.
It was 8 till noon. I'm saying this with quotes because that really meant 7 to 1 or 2.
Yeah.
And so we were off one day a week.
Yeah.
Every week.
Well, I think business agents actually are never off.
That's right. Yeah. That is 100%
true. Our phone is on at all times. And I tell the apprentices all the time, you can call me at 3 a.m. if you have an issue.
Right.
And I mean that. And they know it.
Yeah.
Who do you represent? Who's your jurisdiction?
So I represent the over 1,300 apprentices of Local 134.
Oh, no way.
Yes.
So that's your job?
Yes.
So explain, what does that mean?
So if they have issues, questions, concern, they call me.
That's a great... I didn't know that.
Me
but
neither.
That's fantastic.
I didn't know there's such a thing.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea.
Well, when I was an apprentice,
questions.
There was no
representative
assigned to apprentices. And so this is, to me, is groundbreaking, and it means everything.
That's really interesting. So you're the first sort of like, welcome to the union, here's who I am, here's what the union is, and you talk to these folks.
I do.
So like, as opposed to like, hey, kid, I'll see you in 4 years when you become a journeyman.
Right.
Yeah. You know, hope you make it.
Yeah.
You're actually there to help them there on their way.
Is there a lot of coordination with the training program then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Schedule-wise, yes. We provide, you know, harassment and discrimination training to them.
Right.
And I'm present for that.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
And then do you kind of help them navigate, like, all these benefits and things that they have?
We do have a person that is designated for that.
I gotcha.
Yes.
So some of the benefits, funny you should say that, because, right, so we continue to talk about financial literacy here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the best move, you correct me if I'm wrong, B, is that to try and get people when they're young. And say, hey, because 134 has massive benefits. Like, I've done the math. And what's a Marino's kid? He's joining 134.
Right.
He's 20 some odd.
Yeah.
Just from the annuity, he would be a millionaire by the time he retires.
Probably a couple times over.
Yeah. So your benefits are massive. But in the union world, they're not easy to understand, especially if you're a kid, right? You got a pension, you got annuity, you got health insurance, you got the MCL benefits, you got all these things. So it's important to have somebody that puts all this stuff together for the apprentices, right?
Right.
Is that you?
No, that is not my jurisdiction.
Okay. Well, it could be. And I'm kidding.
So
actually, it just became yours. Don's on the phone. He's like, you're going to take over that.
I've got to kind of take my hat off a little bit to Local 134, because we had a guest in the early days of our show. Her name is Alyssa Cruz.
Yeah.
She's an electrician. She also serves on some of the benefit funds, I think, as a...
Speak with the president.
Right. She introduced Joe Biden at the White House.
Yeah, how cool is that?
But 134 has done a really great job of just kind of putting its money where its mouth is and really walking the walk when it comes to, you know, creating opportunities and creating opportunities for advancement for female members, so that members that are working with the tools can see this and see kind of a path for advancement and know that there really are, you know, big opportunities for them at Local 134. So
absolutely.
Anything you would tell somebody out there?
Definitely consider it.
Yeah.
I mean, for me, it's a no-brainer.
Right.
We're winning over here.
Oh, yeah.
There's a place for you.
There is.
We're more than
just pipe and wire. I mean, we, you know, have a huge scope. I mean, we have renewable energy. And then we have night classes for our journey workers. So they're always evolving with the technology.
Sure.
So, I mean, the benefits and everything, it's amazing.
Take a look at it.
Absolutely.
Come earn while you learn, right?
That's
absolutely.
Right.
Every Wednesday, they can apply.
Oh, there you go. Oh, okay.
9 to 11 a.m. in Alsip.
Check it out. Well, we've got to take a quick break, but thank you both so much for coming in. Everybody, you've been listening to Alyssa Goodstein, the comms director with the Illinois AFL-CIO, and Bea Thompson, a business representative from Local 134 of the IBEW. And we will be back just a few minutes after these words right here on the Workers' Mic on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Workers' Mic, right here on 720 WGN, powered by the now National Coalition of Labor. Ken, Ed, and Phil, let's talk real quick, right? We got it's our two-year anniversary, really cool, bunch of cool stuff happening in today's show, but let's talk about some, like, just 2 seconds. Some big wins, right? When we first got on the show, if you remember, it was like right around the time. First of all, the biggest win, in my whole opinion, was the Workers' Rights Amendment.
No question about
it.
Right?
We got on the show, and that's all we talked about for the first couple of months. It's just pounded, and it passed in every single county.
Every single county.
Deep red Illinois passed 50%+, and first one in the United States, and now we're seeing some other states hopefully mimic
following
that.
So
that was big, right?
Yes.
Not like, you know, your typical, you know, union win or whatever, but a massive
workers
massive
will
win
always have
workers.
The right to collectively bargain in Illinois.
Doesn't say the word union.
Yeah.
Right?
Workers.
It's workers. And that's where the workers mic. So yeah, that's kind of how we got our start. And then we had the SAG-AFTRA.
The writer's
strike.
It was
the writer's strike, and SAG-AFTRA was helping them put on that picket, if you remember, at wherever it was, NBC Plaza. And so they reached out for us and asked for help, and then, you know, the building trade showed up en masse, right? And it was a blast.
Yeah, there were hundreds of people there.
Yeah, hell yeah. It was really, really fun.
Ken got to mess with the cops like he always does.
The cops are like, you got to get these trucks or all these cars off the side of the, or off the sidewalk. And I'm like, no, there's a 10-car rule.
And the cops actually, I'll correct myself, were great about it.
They
it was
fantastic.
The security guy at NBC Tower who I'm
didn't we interview one of the Wachowskis?
We did.
During that?
Yeah, that's right.
Lily Wachowski.
Lily, writers of The Matrix?
Yeah, yep. One of the writers of The Matrix, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was really, really cool. And then
they won.
They won.
I'm starting to see a pattern here.
Then the Screen Actors Guild, right? Then they went on strike, and we had Eric Chedron.
And they were on our show also?
Yes, they were.
And they got a contract.
And they won. And then American Airlines flight attendants, if I don't...
Stop.
Yeah.
Nope.
Another one.
They were on our show.
We should have somebody from Starbucks or Amazon on the show. Why have we not done that?
We don't want to break our streak. And so we had the... we had the flight attendants, right?
They got
a massive contract. They didn't have to go on strike.
Industry-leading contract,
We had the Teamsters, Local 727, and the SCR strike.
Yep.
You want to hear something funny? Just the other day, I got a phone call on the coalition's phone, and it was a woman from SCR. And she's like, hey, I just got hired onto SCR. What are these benefits? Like, can you explain these benefits to me? And I was just like, hey, these are the benefits that your union got you as long as you dues-paying member. She's like, you mean to tell me I get all of these? And I'm like, you get all of them. She's like, just for paying my dues. I'm like, yeah. She's like, this is worth more than, like, I want to send my kid to college. I'm a single mom. She was really, really appreciative. And that was really nice.
That's awesome.
Right? So we had that one.
That's why you do it.
That is why I do it, actually. It's like those calls are nice, yeah. Right? We had Unite Here, Karen Kent, who just went, you know, like one of my favorite people.
Good friend.
Just like,
she had a bunch of them.
There was a hotel that she struck and turned that around real quick. And then the
signature back room, pay.
Got some back pay back for those pay folks.
Back pay for the signature room people, yeah.
So just a lot of people getting on and doing the right thing. It's nice to you know, pound our chest a little bit and spike the ball, right?
Spike the football,
right? You know, we got to celebrate our wins when we get them. So,
and we couldn't do it out with all the strong labor leaders and members here in Chicago.
I think that's right.
Birthplace of the labor movement.
Yeah, hell yeah.
And the listeners who come in strong whenever we ask you for help.
Yes, absolutely. Nice. Really nice. All right, listen, we got to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mic on 720 WGN. It's Phil Davidson here with Ken Edwards, Ed Maher, and we have a special guest on the line, the president of the Illinois AFL-CIO, Mr. Tim Dre. Welcome, Tim.
Good morning.
You've got some big news here today.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to leave Springfield to go down to Mount Olive for the 125th anniversary of the Union Miners Cemetery, the only union-owned cemetery in the United States.
Is that where the Mother Jones statue is?
That's the monument for Mother Jones is there, and it's just a great story. It's a very, very somber place, and when you go into the cemetery, you pass underneath an archway, and at the top of the archway, it says, "The resting place of real union people."
Wow.
I didn't know anything about that.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So what time is the event?
There's a ceremony. Cecil Roberts, president of the United Mine Workers, is coming in.
Okay.
It starts at noon. It's an annual celebration, and the celebration is centered around the remembrance of the Verdun Mine Massacre. History absolutely repeats itself.
In what way?
We had miners that were Southern Eastern Europeans, and in the cemetery, they're, you know, very, very hard names to pronounce. They a little bit of a different religion than the, you know, Anglo-Saxon Protestants that ran the coal companies. And you know, the miners went on strike for better wages and a secure job. And the mine operators imported strikebreakers, sharecroppers from the South.
Wow.
Detective agencies and all that.
Pinkertons.
They opened fire on the striking miners. 8 miners were killed. And, you know, what happened is that no cemetery in central Illinois wanted these miners because they didn't want, you know, a mass site for protest. And so the miners actually scraped their nickels and pennies and dimes together and bought a plot of land in Mount Olive, Illinois. And that's how Union Miner Cemetery came to be.
And right here in Illinois, you would think it'd be like in, you know, West Virginia or someplace like that, but it's right here in Illinois. What were they mining here in Illinois back then?
Well, they were coal miners.
They're coal miners,
down in Burton, Illinois.
Yep.
Burton, Illinois.
Tim, you come from the mines, right?
Yeah, I spent 11 years in the mines, and still, when I was there, we celebrated April 1st in Illinois as Verdun Day in remembrance of the strikers that were killed.
And what year was that, Tim?
1898.
Are you going down to speak? Are you going to speak, Tim?
Yeah, I every year. It's a pilgrimage for me.
Oh, good for you.
I go down every year and speak, and it's a renewal of why we do what we do.
Yeah,
to fight for people, especially all people. It doesn't matter if you're an immigrant or, you know, been in the country for 200 years. We fight for people who work for a living every day.
Well, I think I think that some people are forgetting about that, right? You know,
yes.
With all this talk about immigrants and taking our jobs and all this kind of nonsense, which I think is utter nonsense and
divide and conquer,
absolutely. And
our nation was built by immigrants, right?
Of course, our nation was built by immigrants, and you know, remember the, you know, don't apply if you're Irish, right? Irish need not apply. I mean, come on, like, so it's just like you said, it's history repeats itself. It's this never ending cycle, and we're here back at it again. You know, because these immigrants are coming to take our jobs. No, they're not. They're not, right? Either are they coming in with fentanyl or are they coming
no,
in
they're,
with jobs?
They're coming to buy up all the homes, I think, is what they're doing now.
Right. So which one is it?
Yeah.
politician scapegoating, you know, and it's wrong. Right. It was wrong then, and it's even more wrong today because we know better.
Like Ed has always said, a contract doesn't see color, it doesn't see race, it doesn't see religion, it doesn't see nationality. It's a contract, period, the end, right? You're a worker bee, you get the benefits of the union. End of discussion. And so, you know, sometimes we got to step up and fight harder. Good for you for doing that, Tim. That's really, really cool. And
Tim, Mother Jones, she famously helped organize the miners, right?
Oh, yes. Yeah, she was all over the country, you know, from the Battle of Ludlow when, you know, the National Guard opened fire with machine guns on striking miners to the hills of West Virginia where the first bombing that ever took place by the U.S. Army was on striking miners at Blair Mountain in West Virginia.
That's
people
crazy,
don't know that.
The history.
The first bombing that the Air Force did, the Army Air Force at the time, on striking miners in Blair, on Blair Mountain.
Americans bombing its own citizens.
I know.
Right?
Yeah. And you wonder how many, you know, union members today just take for granted of, like, the fight. People lost their lives.
We need, look, I think Tim has always said, we need to do a better job of teaching labor history.
Yeah,
we just
sure.
do. And at some point, we have to have a show or two about labor history, right?
It's bloody.
It is bloody. It's violent, right?
And we could get back there faster than people think.
Yeah, darn right. That's right.
Yeah, it's written in blood.
So, Tim.
Yes.
Just say it one more time. Where are you going to be and what time?
The Union Miners Cemetery, 12 o'clock. Union Miners Cemetery is very easy to get to. You get on the Stevenson, you head south for 3.5 hours, and you're there.
That's it? 3.5 hours?
There's a sign right off the highway, right?
All right, everybody, listen. If you're listening right now, get in the car.
Yeah.
Go.
If you drive like Ken, you can get there in 2.5.
Good one.
So we're going to do that, and then they're going to serve a miner's lunch, and so Roberts from the United Mine Workers will be there, and again, it's a renewal of union spirit.
I love it. What's a miner's lunch?
I don't know. I always say, you know, believe it or not, you know, there's no refrigerators or anything down there, so, like, I ate peanut butter and jelly for 11 years, and I can't eat peanut butter and jelly today.
That's funny.
No wonder why you're so fit.
Exactly.
Hey, Tim, thank you so much. And by the way, thanks for your sponsorship. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. We thank you guys for delivering the good work.
Yeah. Listen, we'll be back right after these words with more of the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mic, powered by the National Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, Voya Financial, and United Healthcare.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. Something that we have talked about, being this our 2-year anniversary, we talk about it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
We should talk about it again. We should talk about it until it goes away, and that is child labor.
That's right.
Right? Rolling back child labor laws around the country, especially Iowa, beef packing plants, meat packing plants. Like, just come on, man. 14-year-olds working there. So we have a special surprise for you as part of our anniversary show, and we have a little bit of a, what do you want to call it, theatrical performance?
Yeah, dramatic rendering.
Dramatic rendering of something that's, a reenactment, so of something that's not really too far off the actual truth. So with that, we want to welcome Timmy.
Hi,
how's it going?
Good, how are you?
Good, how old are you?
9.
And you work at a slaughterhouse?
Yeah.
In Iowa?
Yeah, in
and
Iowa.
And you kill cows?
Yeah.
You like it?
No.
You don't like it? Why? What would you rather be doing?
I'd rather be playing with my friends or out or in a school.
And this is all coming in the wake of Iowa changing its child labor laws, because a couple of years ago, you would have been in school, you would have been at home doing your homework, playing t-ball. But thanks to the people in Iowa, no more. Because, I mean, tell us again, where are you working?
I'm working in a slaughterhouse.
And do you like, Iowa. So you kill animals, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not a job for a kid, is it? Are there any other kids that work there?
Yeah, there's other kids.
There are?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And, like, do you work overnight or during the day, or when do you work?
Sometimes I have to work overnight.
Are you serious?
During the day, yeah.
Wow. Oh, holy cow.
It's the worst.
It's the worst, right?
Yeah.
And do they pay you, or, like, do they pay you? They don't even pay you.
They just make me do it.
Are you joking me?
That's terrible.
That is unbelievable.
Do they feed you?
Do they feed you, at least?
No.
So sometimes. Can you, like, eat the animal scraps?
Yeah.
You...
He just puts them in his pocket.
Holy cow. Holy cow. Get it? Holy cow?
Holy cow.
Timmy, listen, I want to thank you for coming in here.
For your bravery.
Your bravery. And I want you to, when you go back to Iowa, you tell them that this is wrong, right? Kids shouldn't be working in slaughterhouses,
yeah,
right? It is terrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, good for you. Maybe,
we're never going to let this happen in
and maybe we're going to start like a kids union. What do you think?
Yeah, we should do that.
We should, right?
Yes.
Kids Slaughterhouse Union, Iowa.
Yeah.
Right?
Thank you for being a whistleblower.
Yeah.
We need these people.
Timmy for president.
I think you're the natural choice. You'd have my vote if I was a kid and working in a slaughterhouse.
Timmy, anything else you want to say?
Yeah, it's terrible. Just
yeah. Child labor is bad, yeah. Right?
We just got to change the laws in Iowa.
You're absolutely right. Thank you so much. And any other state that wants to roll back child labor laws, correct?
Yes.
That's really well said, Timmy. Thank you so much.
You want to say hi to your mom or anything, Timmy?
Yeah, sure. What's hi, Mom.
Good man. Always say hi to your mom.
What about the dad?
Oh, hi, Dad.
Oh, that's nice. That's really nice. Timmy, thank you so much. So that was interesting. Everybody that's listening, put your phones down. Stop calling because that was fake. If you will, fake-ish.
Yeah, he doesn't really work in a slaughterhouse, but there are kids who do.
Satire.
Yeah, that was satire. Thank you so much, Phil. Right? But yeah, there are kids that are working in slaughterhouses. There are kids that are working in McDonald's. Look, we haven't even gotten to slave labor where prisoners are working, you know, in these big corporations. We're going to have, tons of stuff
about
that. There's
kids working in the building trades. There's kids who are framing houses. I mean, we have evidence of it who are 12 years old.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Not in the union.
Yes. Not in the union, of course.
Well, they should be paying dues.
Junior rate,
junior rate, pre apprentice,
first year's free.
But no, it's real, and these are from like national home builders. These aren't just this is mom and pop's framing. Like this is big companies doing this, exploiting labor, and yeah.
Look, we joke about it, right? We're having some fun with it, but it really is a serious problem. We have to keep talking about it because it's important to make sure that. Kids need to be in school. They don't need to be working, and especially don't need to be working in slaughterhouses.
And it's a problem that's spreading.
We're going backwards.
It's getting worse.
Yeah, more and more states are seeing this and being like, well, we're not the first, so with the heat won't be too bad.
Don't you remember like when you were young and you'd have to get like the teacher's permission or the principal's permission to work in the summer, whatever that was? There was a grade. I think it was
like a permit.
Yeah, exactly. Those are gone.
Gone.
Yeah, you don't even need those anymore.
No.
Right? It's just, it's unbelievable. So for all those people that are worried about the immigrants taking our jobs, let's start with the kids.
Yeah.
Right? How about don't send your kid to work? Start there. Start at home. We'll figure out everything else. All right. So we got some other stuff to talk about. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right. You guys don't know this, but I'm going to tell you.
Oh, boy.
And that is my coworkers and I at Chippendales decided to form a union.
I did see that, actually.
You knew about that?
You're the first person I thought of when I saw that.
Well, obviously, yeah. So
that's weird, Phil. That's really weird.
Well, I know his history, so it makes sense.
That's a good point.
Actually, Phil is my greaser.
That's right.
My oiler.
Your oil man?
Yeah.
I got a story about that.
The price of oil went down.
How do you like that? Chippendales.
Yeah.
Chippendales, right? And they've been around for seems like eons. And they're joining Actors Equity.
Good for them.
Well, you would know. How long have they been around for?
Chippendales?
Yeah.
I want to say
when did you get 30, your first job?
32 years.
No, yeah, was it your first start?
I'm actually Chippendales' elder. Senior Chippendales.
Retiree.
I get first shift.
So you're the one who's probably organizing this. So
First shift. I get first crack because I'm senior.
Jeez.
Saggydales.
They put him on at like 5:15 p.m. But we've had a couple of, there have been a couple of other similar types of
that didn't
locations.
Work.
Well, no, there were a couple of clubs in California, Nevada, I think, for ladies that, that unionized.
Two exotic dance clubs have unionized so far in the country.
Right.
One in L.A., and I forget the other one. It's like in Washington or something like that. But this one, I think, is in Vegas.
Yeah.
And so, which, by the way, must be a massive, massive moneymaker. And, I'm not sure if it's about money or whatever it's about, but it's normal things, working conditions and being treated right and maybe getting a little bit of the profits. Who knows? Do you know that the head of Actors Equity is Brooke Shields?
I do know that.
You knew that?
I did not know that.
I think that's right.
They're the stage actors, not the film actors.
I get it confused, but I think that's right.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that makes sense, right? So they're on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
And hopefully nobody's filming.
You don't think all the ladies are there with the cameras?
I just assume that those old ladies are animals.
Those old ladies. That's nice.
I have I've never been to one of these places, so I have a sort of a cartoonish, you know, idea of.
Well, you went to medieval times, didn't
there
you?
I've been to medieval times twice. Yeah. I'm an animal there.
Did you see the show about the founder of Chippendales?
No, no, Phil, I didn't.
It was pretty good.
You spend a lot of time on this subject, Phil.
Seems like Phil knows a lot about Chippendales.
He does.
He killed the choreographer. Yeah, it's really
allegedly.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, it's a crazy story. Yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it was on maybe like a year ago. Watch every episode, DVR them.
Was your favorite part the part with all the oiled up dudes?
I like the dancing.
I know you did.
Yes.
Phil watched it without the sound.
Enough talk.
All right. So anyway, Boeing. Machinist. Boeing. The machinists are still on strike.
That's right.
And they're in for like a long haul strike.
Yeah, Boeing, I think, like walked out and withdrew their offers.
Yeah.
Imagine that. And I forget what the number is. It's something like they're hemorrhaging. $1 billion
a month,
$1 billion a month, and they're willing to take that coming off the heels of a door flying off the airplane,
yeah,
right, and some just like abysmal safety records, and now they're going to take this strike and lose more money, and so I started to read into it a little bit, and one of the things that I guess has Wall Street concerned and should have Boeing shareholders concerned if you're listening, and that is the credit rating gets dropped. So the longer the strike goes on, the worse their credit rating is, the more it costs them to borrow money, et cetera. And so, like, why not just settle the strike, right? Give these guys what they want. You're a multi-billion, trillion-dollar organization that makes money every single year. Give the guys what they need. So I'm not sure where this goes from here.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this is just being done in an effort to drive down wages. I mean, Boeing's done this when they moved operations from a union state to South Carolina, the lowest wage state in the nation. So if what you're going for is to cut costs, you know, a race to the bottom, it seems like you're going to have some really terrible unintended consequences.
I think that's right. And, you know, just be careful. Once again, be careful what you ask for, because if you don't want to pay the workers what they deserve, you're going to get what you pay for. And I don't want that working on an airplane.
We've already seen their safety record.
Yeah,
right.
I don't want that working on an airplane that I'm flying, you know. And so and I've been looking into the machinists as well. And, you know, we have a lot of great machinists here in Chicagoland, like Ryan Kelly, local 126.
Yeah.
I think 701 mechanics are machinists as well.
Yep.
So they have like a strike pay, but it's like, I think it's only like $250 a week. It's not a lot,
yeah.
You know? And so over the past like year or two, people have asked, like, is there such a thing as strike insurance? And it's funny because for the worker bees, there's not.
Right.
It doesn't exist. But did you know that if you're a company, you can buy strike insurance?
Sadly, I could believe that.
Imagine that?
Yeah.
So, like, the companies can buy it. Like, if people walk out on strike, like, oh, we got all this money here to, you know, backfill and whatever we lost, you know, we're going to get paid. You know, I'm making broad brushes. But there's nothing out there for union workers, right? People that go on strike. And I don't know if you're listening, Voya, MetLife, you know, maybe it's something to think about. Like, what does that look like? How much would it cost? You know, is there a profit margin in there for the company that may be thin, but maybe can help workers, you know, in cases of hard times? Because, look, we talked about this all the time, right? At our credit union, we have skip payments, right, if people are on strike.
Mm-hmm.
And some other, like Union Plus, I think they have a credit card where, you know, if you're on strike, you can get $500 and skip a couple of payments as well. There are a couple of programs out there, but nothing really that's going to make you able to withstand the long haul.
Yes.
So your spouse has to go to work. You're going to run through your savings. Maybe you're on the picket line during the day, but you got to go work at night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, drive for Uber, whatever it is that you got to do, but you can't cross that picket line.
Right.
So we'll see how this thing plays out.
As like a supplemental to a union strike fund.
Yeah. Right. Some union strike funds have, you know, lots and lots and lots and lots of money. Yeah. Others don't.
Yeah.
So it's a, you know, how do you go on strike when you tell somebody, hey, you're not going to get a paycheck for as long as it takes to get a better paycheck?
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, there is a cost benefit analysis. Right. If you're on strike for 4 weeks and you're looking for a blank percent, that blank percent needs to now go up a little bit to make up for the money that you just lost. So it's a tough situation.
I mean, I think that's I've said this many, many times that there seems like there's been sort of this misconception about strikes that workers will just go on strike anytime they feel like it. But right. what you're saying, Ken, is completely true, that if you're going on strike, you're going without a paycheck for you know, an unknown period of time. So people don't make this decision lightly.
Oh, God, no.
Like, it has to be a very, very good reason, and all of your other options have got to be sort of played out before workers are willing to say, yeah, we'll hit the streets for this for as long as it takes.
And, we, you know, look, when I worked at 150, we would always tell, I would tell our guys, like, take a bit of your overtime every week and put it aside. Put it into a separate fund. Put it in for a rainy day. Because one day you might need it.
You might need it.
You know
right.
what I mean? And when, you know, we were starting negotiations, we would tell people, take your OT, put it in a separate fund. God forbid we got to go on strike. We want to be able to withstand it financially. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
And another thing.
And that's a tactic by the employer, right? They're trying to bleed you dry. They're trying to get you to submit and bring you to your knees.
Economic.
Yep.
Right? I mean, look, it's an economic fight at the end of the day.
Yep.
Right? Who's got the strength?
Yeah.
And who's got the economic power? Can we shut off your... you know, supply of blank and then cause you economic harm? And if the answer is yes, how much economic harm are you going to take before you give in to the demands? And vice versa, right, where some employers will actually lock people out and say, you know what, you can't come to work until you accept our contract.
That's what happened with the writers and the actors.
Yeah, that's
like,
right.
We'll just bleed these people dry, you know.
And they were wrong.
Yeah.
They misread that. And so, you know, I have a couple of thoughts. One is people like, what's the lady's name, the woman's name that was Jeff Bezos's wife from Amazon.
Mackenzie
Scott?
That's right.
Yeah.
And now Melinda Gates.
If you're listening, Mackenzie, hi.
And Melinda Gates.
Melinda Gates,
yeah. Right?
Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
She's still married.
They're still married.
Yeah.
And people like, you know, Taylor Swift, that's a billionaire. And, you know, all these multi-millionaire, billionaire entertainers and corporate leaders and things like that that have these foundations, you see them donating to fantastic causes. I'm not saying they don't. Obviously, they do, you know, trying to fix homelessness and cure cancer and all these kind of altruistic things, obviously. But you never see somebody go like, how about we create a workers' fund, right? How about we give some of that money back that, you know, basically made us billionaires because it's the working class that did, the working class that buys the phones, that goes to the concerts, that buys the records, you know, all that kind of stuff, uses the Amazon. You know, so what happens if we had some of these philanthropists, if you will, start a fund? I came across one called the Working Families Friend, and it's based in, I think it was Kansas City, if I'm not mistaken. They're a not-for-profit organization that if you're in dire need of money, they help you.
That's cool.
It's really
cool. For all workers?
Just the ones that contribute.
Got it.
And it's a bunch of unions that got together. They put in a little bit of money here, a little bit of money there, and then they make a decision like, hey, I'm, you know, behind on my house, I was on strike, et cetera.
Did you say Kansas City?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You know about this, right?
We are part of that. Correct.
Yeah, the carpenters are,
yep.
right?
Yep.
So listen, we got to take a break, and then we'll be right back and we'll finish up our show.
We got to go. This is the end.
Oh, this is the whole end of our show. Oh, boy, I got so much more to talk about. Well, there's always next week, yeah?
There's always next week,
Go
yes.
Bears.
The Bears are winning, I think.
Negative 10 to...
77-5.
Ditka 38.
Mini Ditkas.
All right, listen, thank you so much, everybody. Thanks for all your support. Thanks
Happy
for everybody.
2-year anniversary.
Well, yeah, 2-year anniversary. Thanks for everybody that makes this show what it is. We'll be back with more of the Workers' Mic next week, right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Worker's Mic was powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premis Health, and Voya Financial. For additional information and podcasts of The Worker's Mic, visit WGNRadio.com.